Good morning, good morning. I'm Dave Mazza.
And I'm Joanne Bowman.
And you're listening to Voices from the Edge. And this morning we're going to talk about the wild scramble that's going on as a result of Multnomah County Chair Ted Wheeler being appointed this week to the position of state treasurer to fill in, to replace Ben Westland, who passed away last Sunday. It's set off quite a scramble. There's lots of scrambling around going on by candidates, filing, some unfiling after they filed. And, of course, there's big questions coming up as to what exactly this move is going to mean for Multnomah County. Ted Wheeler has been dealing with a lot of very critical issues, and a lot of them have not yet been resolved. So we're going to look at that, and we're also going to spend a little bit of time this morning as well looking at some of the most recent developments regarding the Independent Police Review Division. There's been some new calls for overhauls of the system, not only outside City Hall this time, but inside City Hall. So you want
to, minds.
Yeah. And if you want to join us in the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. So what do you think on the IPR, Joanne?
Well, let me start with Ben Westland.
Okay, sure.
Ben, I think the thing that's missed in this whole scramble for repositioning political chairs is a good man just died.
That's true.
Right? And it's been appalling to me that we seem to have skipped over that. And Ben Westland and I were freshman legislators in the same freshman class. And he was as far left as I am. He was as far right as you could possibly be on his first day in the legislative body. But here's a man that I actually watch actually change through the more that he learned, right? So the more he learned, the more thoughtful he became, and he ultimately became an incredible statesman. He became a real champion for healthcare reform, and even in his staunchest right-wing days, was always someone who laughed easily and always someone who was willing to listen to people who didn't believe like he did. And so, you know, I don't want to talk about it without talking first about this incredible man who died. And I think is a real loss for the state of Oregon. A really, really good man who did good work for this state. And so I want to start there.
Good point. Good point. And I agree. I think, you know, in fact, it's been rather unseemly the way many people have sort of just focused on, oh, boy, here's the seat.
Here's
let's go
seat.
For
That's
it. And
just right.
Let's forget about it. And it should be kept in mind that Westland inherited quite a mess from his Republican predecessor.
Oh, actually, it was not a Republican predecessor.
You're right. I'm sorry. It's just so easy to blame the Republicans.
Right. We're so used to it, yeah.
It must have been their fault, really. But he didn't – I mean, he did inherit quite a mess and has – you know, he worked quite hard to try to bring some rationality, particularly during a very difficult time when – state investments were taking big hits because of the financial crisis.
That's absolutely true. And I guess the good news is in the year that he's been – or the time that he's been there, the 3 years that he's been there – actually, this would have – yeah, this is the fourth year. So the 3 years that he's been there, the fact that we've heard nothing much from this state treasurer is a good thing.
That's right.
It means it's actually gone back to being an office that's actually doing some good work.
Yeah.
So I did want to start there and just – express my condolences to his family and his friends, because he certainly is a man that left some big footprints to fill in this state, and I want to be appreciative of that. I know how easy it is for when people die to just, like, forget them.
Move on.
I was pretty appalled by that.
Life is transitory, Joanne.
Maybe I'm feeling my own mortality because I'm like, wait a minute, I want people to say something about me. Don't just say, okay, well, we got a new director.
Well, I know some people will be saying something about you, but
this is true. Probably not for public radio, however. But let's talk a bit about, and so everyone knows now that Multnomah County Chairman Ted Wheeler has now been sworn in as the next state treasurer. Because this is election year and the treasurer position was on the ballot, there was a 48-hour window for people to decide mm-hmm. whether or not they were going to jump into that race up to the filing deadline, which was Tuesday at 5 p.m. And so, as you know, lots of people jumped right on in, right? And some of them have now jumped out. So for me, I guess, being a little selfish, since I live in Multnomah County, my concern is what happens to Multnomah County. I think that Ted Wheeler had a very methodical approach in Multnomah County to really addressing some of the core issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, been cutting the budgets at Multnomah County for more than a decade. We continue to have this jail that has never, ever been used. And, you know, and we've got, you know, issues with mental health. We don't provide enough services to folks. We still have overrepresentation of people of color in the criminal justice system within Multnomah County. And so there are a lot of big issues that still have to be resolved at Multnomah County. And now we are we have this musical chairs thing happening with one of the city and county commissioners throwing his hat in to run for chair. And then a lot of other people have jumped into the race.
Yeah.
And you've got the cheat sheet
In fact, I actually have the cheat sheet here. Okay. And at present, well, looks like from the county elections division, we have, let's see, excuse me there, we have, I'm trying to give a count here of how many people have actually filed for the county chair position. We have one, two, three. We've, of course, had a couple of people withdraw, including Margaret Carter and James Lee, who I'm you know, who also apparently filed and then withdrew quickly. And then because Jeff Kogan, who sits in District 2, is throwing his hat in to go for that position as the chair, that's opening up the slot for that seat, in which we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 people running, including his one of his staffers, Carol Collymore. And there's also a minister, Chuck Curry, who's been very active in the community, Gary Hansen, who's an old-time, a former county member, county board member, as well as a former metro councilor.
Former legislator.
Former legislator, comes out of the building trades, and then a long list of other people, some of whom I'm sorry, I'm just not familiar with. So, yeah, there's it's quite a long list. And
there's some surprises in that seat. Loretta Smith, who's been on staff with Senator Ron Wyden forever,
right,
actually has put her name in. Tom Mock Groff, who did he work for Wyden, I believe?
I believe that's correct,
I believe
correct,
he was
yeah.
on Wyden. Roberta Phillips, who, you know, put her name in for the Senate seat where Margaret Carter resigned.
Mm-hmm.
Maria Rubio, who worked for Mayor Potter. Irma Linda Costello, I don't think I know her.
That's that didn't ring any bells, but
Paul Van Orden, he's run quite a few times in the past.
Oftentimes, right.
And so, as you say, there's all of a sudden a race that was going to be a sleeper turns into a 10-person contest.
And it's as you pointed out, I mean, there's a lot of reason to be concerned because there are so many issues. And, I mean, there's just a lot of brick-and-mortar issues
That's
in terms
right.
of the counties looking at dealing with bridge infrastructure,
That's
the
right.
jail site, or the jail center, the name of which has just went right out of my head.
Wapato. There you go.
Wapato.
Between the two of us, we got a brain.
Yeah. There's that.
Right.
There's a number of other things. And, you know, I think one of the important things, and I really think that this was an important thing that Ted Wheeler did, was to really put the county out there as to draw attention to this whole issue of the
urban renewal. Yes, that's right.
That, you know, finally, I mean,
right.
I really think it was important that Ted Wheeler stepped up and said, told the city.
Excuse me? Yeah.
Yeah, you're picking our pockets,
that's
folks,
right.
in order to do your soccer fields and various
right.
other pet projects. And that's not going to be something that's going to go away. And I think it's, you know, I hope that whoever ends up filling that spot will, you know, fulfill that role as aggressively as Wheeler did.
Yes, I'm hopeful of that as well, because I really think that, of course, this is the most populated county in the state, and this is the county that, as I said, has been cutting their budget nonstop. And so The passes of 66 and 67 provided some immediate relief. But as soon as we get to the next legislative session, next session, we don't know what the finances are going to look like. And since we still have one of the highest unemployment counts in the country, we still have a lot more to do to get people back to work, which means that the services that the county provides become more and more important the higher the unemployment numbers stay.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Voices from the Edge. Joanne and I are talking this morning about some of the ramifications of Governor Kulongoski's appointment of Multnomah County Chair Ted Wheeler to the position of state treasurer to replace Ben Westland, who passed away last Sunday. And we're looking at it both in terms of the issues themselves. I mean, we know that the state's most populous county is confronting a wide array of issues, and some of which that Wheeler had launched some very important initiatives on, but his departure leaves many of those things undone.
That's right.
And the question is where it's going to go from there. And then, of course, we're also looking at it on the political side in terms of who's jumping in there, what they would bring to the chair, what that's going to do in terms of the direction that the county goes.
I guess the good news is that there will be competitive races in Multnomah County, and quite frankly, a very short time period, right? We're talking, you know, this is the May election, and so we're talking just a couple of months for people to be able to raise money and make the case for why they should have one of those seats that is just opened up because of the untimely death of Ben Westland. I also think that for the voters within Multnomah County, we should be clear about what kind of questions we're going to ask people. You know, a pretty face doesn't make a good candidate, right? What we really want to know is, you know, what's their background? What's been their experience? What have they done already to actually improve the community that they live in? Whether or not they are good at working to build consensus with other county commissioners. We certainly don't want to go back to the bad days of the bad girls.
Yeah, exactly.
It's wonderful that we've actually moved into a more respectful interaction between our elected officials, and we certainly want to maintain that. And then, what are they going to do about plugging these budget holes? I mean, how will this new leadership work together to make sure that Multnomah County gets its fair share of state dollars?
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, I mean, on the plus side, competitive election, short time frame, people are going to have to get out there. My fear is that's also going to shortchange how much information actually gets out there, and we're going to end up with the soundbite, which is what we get often.
That's right.
Not that that's a big surprise,
right.
But you know, it's not like it's a window of opportunity for lots of community meetings, town hall meetings, and things of that nature. And it would certainly be good to see organizations step forward and try to pull some of that together and get some of the candidates out there to have to respond to you know, questions from their future constituents.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And right. In this short time period, the question becomes, how much time can they spend talking to potential voters versus how much time they're going to have to spend raising money to actually run a campaign?
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, you know, the other thing I think is, and one of the things that makes the county seat, any of the county seats tough, is the somewhat divided nature of the county. I mean, you know, we do have, you travel to East County is very different still. It's
That's
changing,
right.
Granted. I mean, Gresham is a far different community than it was 20 years ago.
That's
and
right.
In many ways has more in common with Portland than it did before. But
right.
There are still vast stretches of East County that is markedly different. And I'm not saying they're markedly wrong or
right.
anything like that,
right.
but, you know, some of the things I think that those of us living within Portland take as, you know, just the natural, a natural starting point on policy are still issues to be addressed and questioned. I mean, the level of, you know, of involvement of government itself. And
right.
I mean, we are talking about areas where things like, you know, putting in sewers were very controversial,
that's
and people
right.
were very resistant. And so, you know, that's another important piece for whoever steps into that position is how well are they going to negotiate that sort of thing? Because we could see, you know, very easily, you know, a pandering to some of the worst elements within any of those particular circles of thought out there.
Well, and the other thing is that area has become much more diverse.
Yes.
and I would suspect than it wanted to do, wanted to be, because of the folks that have been pushed out of the city of Portland. And unless we address the fact that poor people and low-income people cannot afford to live within the city limits, that means that there needs to be more services out in East County, and it needs to make sure that they are culturally competent services, because somebody was telling me there's like 56 languages now within the East County area.
It's incredible.
Which is incredible, a difference in that 10 years, just in the last 10 years that change has happened.
And, you know, I think the challenge, you know, what's becoming challenging about that is these also, the diversity is coming in a very new way. I mean, not only, of course, have we seen the displacement of a large amount of the African-American community in Portland, which, you know, many people from that community have moved out into the Gresham area. We also have seen, you know, the Latino community. There's been displacement there. But we're seeing all these new communities coming in. I mean, there's a whole array of Eastern Europeans. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, African communities and what have you. So it's become which on one hand, it's wonderful because it's this diversity is just, you know, coming out of the woodwork. On the other hand, it does present new challenges, particularly for for government bodies that are primarily responsible for delivering
those services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
that's absolutely true. Well, I don't guess anybody wants to talk to us about the county. I think that they're pretty they're probably it's not election time yet, and I don't want to go there. We could move on to talk
we
about
should,
Randy
We should spend
Leonard.
A little time about, yeah, because that is a, although I tell you, listeners, the county is important and there will be a test.
And not only that, clearly we're going to be hearing more and we're going to be bringing candidates in as we get closer to the election and giving the listeners an opportunity to really hear directly from the candidates what policies and processes they want to move forward during their election process. So we have a inside-outside. There's some agreement that the independent police review needs to be changed. And we have Commissioner Randy Leonard, who is proposing some changes along with the auditor that will be presented to the city council next week, as per my Oregonian says. My understanding is that this proposal would actually provide the current IPR with the ability to compel testimony and allow IPR to be able to actually conduct their own, to start their own investigation, whereas now they just review investigations that have already been done. They could actually, without a complaint, based on facts that they've gathered, actually do an investigation of inappropriate activities and actions by Portland Police.
Right.
Did I get that right?
Yep. That's it. I mean, it is a big thing.
That's huge.
Giving the IPR subpoena power, and that subpoena power can be used for independent inquiries, is a remarkably big step forward. Although, of course, it's one that has been asked for now for at least 10 years, if not longer, because otherwise the IPR or whatever, you know, whatever name, PIAC and all the other mutations it went through, ended up being the person sitting outside the hearing room door and never really being involved. So the other piece of that, of course, is that the recommendation that the IPR recommend discipline in police misconduct cases.
Yes.
And
that's huge.
That is also big, because that has been not only aggressively protected by the police bureau itself, but, you know, the city council has been very hesitant and nervous about, you know, allowing independent review to move that closely into that. And obviously, I didn't read at the same time they made that recommendation any headline that the head of the police union's head exploded upon hearing that news, since he has
been adamantly opposed.
Opposed to that and many other things revolving improving the police bureau
and police accountability. And so for me, I will be meeting with Commissioner Leonard later this morning. And one of the questions that I have for him is, because I believe that the IPR is fundamentally flawed anyway, I'm concerned about giving power to a flawed organization.
Mm-hmm.
The organization has not had the rigorous review that was promised 10 years ago by then-Mayor Vera Katz. In fact, it was supposed to be temporary, and now it's become this permanent entity that somehow the assumption is that it's the right entity at the right time. For me, one of my questions will be, why is this the right group? I mean, I still believe that we need a truly independent police review, because if you this is the group that worked under Gary Blackmer, which I think created a culture that is inconsistent with holding police accountable. And so if the same people are now going to be different because now they have some different powers, how does that play out in the real world?
Right.
So I have some concerns that we're trying to fix. We're trying to put some fixes around a flawed system.
It's like that old 1961 Chevy Bel Air I used to have when I was in high school that I just kept adding things onto it, but underneath it was an old rotted out 61 Chevy Bel Air.
And it was still
that's
a rotted out 61 Chevy.
I needed to buy a new car.
That's right.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just for folks who may not remember that the current IPR was literally cobbled together by Gary Blackmer at Vera Katz's insistence.
Yes.
Vera Katz went through had a blue ribbon commission, went through this lengthy process, and actually the commission was quite good. It was a very, had an array of people involved from the community, came up with a very good report and recommendations, which she then immediately tabled and said, well, thank you, but I'm not beholden to the group I called.
Right, that's right.
And then charged Gary Blackmer to
figure it out,
which, in light of the fact that, he was an auditor and really didn't have anything to do with police accountability was an interesting approach. And so we've ended up with this sort of makeshift thing. And I agree. I mean, I still feel like there is a real disconnect between the IPR and the community. And it's great to empower the staff. But if the staff, as you say, reflects the culture of being a subservient lapdog to the police, well, then, who cares if they can issue subpoenas?
Right, right. Well, and since they've actually had the power to, they've had powers that they have not used. And I remember reading this morning that just a year ago, their powers were expanded, but they had never used the expanded powers that they had. And so, I mean, I guess the good news is that we have a sitting city commissioner who has taken a leadership role in trying to fix this problem. And so I don't want to minimize that at all. I think it's fabulous to have that kind of leadership on the city council. But the devil's going to be in the details. So really, until we have an opportunity to actually review the language of the proposal, because as a former legislator, I don't believe anything until I actually read the statutory language and see how that really plays out. And, of course, at the same time this is happening, the police contract negotiations start tomorrow. And so this definitely needs to feed into that process, because we actually need to have some continuity between the police union's new contract that's under negotiation and what's being proposed by City Commissioner Randy Leonard and the auditor Laverne. What's the last name?
LaVon Griffin Velada.
LaVon Griffin, yeah.
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, Police Union President Scott Westerman actually has already linked this new proposal for change to the contract negotiations.
I think alike.
I don't think that he sees the goals as the same as you in doing that, but he has already said he feels it should be part of the contract negotiations, hoping that the IPR's ability to conduct independent investigations would be more limited. So that's obviously going to be, they're going to use the police contract negotiations as a lever to try to deflate this thing, flawed as we both think it is, to try to deflate that thing, which of course raises the question about the way the city does the contract negotiations as well.
Right.
I realize that, that many public employee unions are vehemently opposed to allowing more public involvement in contract negotiations. But it seems to me that we really need to have a much more transparent process.
Well, and when you have, this is the only union that has life and death decision making.
And when
you have the power to take someone's life, there should be higher expectations.
Exactly.
And we should not be just giving the police everything they want. in their contract, which is exactly how we got to where we are today.
Right.
And so clearly there has not been someone prior to now representing the public's interest in these contract negotiations. And hopefully, because of the tragedy of January 29th, we're on a path that will be very thoughtful about making sure that we're not giving away the shop just so that police can feel comfortable out on the street. But since they don't feel comfortable anyway, it seems insane to be giving away the city without any accountability built in. And that's really, I mean, the bottom line is we have to have accountability. And we have a police union that says, no, we don't. We don't need accountability. Mm-hmm. Just trust us. We do. We know what's right, and we don't need any accountability at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, as you can tell, we're talking about the new announcement of plans to overhaul the police oversight. And there was the coverage in the Oregonian this morning. They're going to be looking at it next Wednesday. It's a number of recommendations to empower the IPR. If you want to join us in the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And we're going to go to the phone lines. Apparently we have Al on the line. Good morning, Al.
Yeah. What do you folks think about this deal? This arbiter awarded this
firefighter $100,000.
You betcha! I love every minute of it. I'm a union. I'm not. I've never been. I don't even live in the city of Portland, but I'm a blue collar dude. Anytime anybody, I really don't know the details of it. Anything that makes the city council get all uptight, I'm loving it.
You see that as a good thing, huh?
I mean, basically, I don't know. There's all kinds of things, but just on the surface of it, I can live with it.
Well, you can live with it because you don't live in the city of Portland, and it's not your tax money that's going to someone who's been bilking the system for years.
Well,
and so,
if he's bilking the system, where have you folks been letting him get away with it?
Well, let me give you some facts. Would you like to actually know?
I don't know if you're giving me facts or not. Could be a lot of hot air.
Well, you know, all you have to do is go and look it up. I mean, it's not like it hasn't been covered thoroughly by all the media outlets within the city. But here's a couple of facts. So here's a gentleman that said he was injured on the job. And so he was out on disability. And so while he was on disability, he went to school to become a chef. He opened a couple of restaurants. He is now flying between Portland and Seattle to keep his restaurants afloat. He's doing well. He's living a good life. He did not appeal the decision to cut him off from benefits because he's moved on into another occupation. However, the union decided to file suit and demand that he, in fact, continue to get disability payments because he was asked to come back on a light-duty job and declined to come back. And so through the arbitration process, which if I can tell you a little bit about that, too, because I know too much, through the arbitration process, they agreed with the union and awarded him $100,000 and back disability payment. And so he will continue to be getting disability payments indefinitely unless something changes, unless the city council challenges that. And I think they certainly should challenge that.
Anything unlawful happen there along the line?
Well, other than theft.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Other than theft, no. Nothing illegal happened.
Yeah. No biggie. No biggie at all. But to get back to the union negotiations, I think that I certainly don't want to see collective bargaining rights infringed upon, but there has to be some rationality, and there has to just be, you know, a much more public involvement, community involvement. I'm not directing that so much at the union. They're doing what they, you know,
what they're supposed to do.
Right. But what I'm upset with is the city council, which seems to have, checked their spines at the door when it comes to actually negotiating with them. And furthermore, I think more insultingly, not really making a good faith effort to find out and work with the community to stake out, okay, what are these key issues that, you know, we know impinge upon our ability to have, you know, to make the police bureau what we want it to be? Because, you know, how often, as you know, when we look at suggesting a reform, well, we'd like to, but, you know, the contract doesn't permit us to do that.
Yes.
Well, you know, we need to break that cycle of the contract doesn't permit it to do us to do that, but we keep signing contracts
that don't permit us to do
that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, before we get back to getting further angry over this situation, let's talk what's coming up on KBOO this morning. At 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on A Deeper Look, join host Linda Olson Osterlund and guest authors Cynthia Bricks and William Keepin as they discuss a sanctuary for abused or abandoned women and children based in Pune, India. That's one to tune in on. That's an important thing going on over there. I've been reading about that. At 10, here, Air Cascadia with Chris Andre and Liam Delta. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Nora Barrows-Friedman reports on the increase in the building of illegal Jewish settlements in the West Bank, and financial analyst Catherine Austin Fitz is back with Community Business. At 11 on Between the Covers, the guest is Annie Barrows, the author of the Guernsey Literary and Potato Pie Society. Say that three times, please. And at 11:30 on Words and Pictures, the guest is Dame Darcy, creator of the comic Meat Cake. So all that's coming up this morning on KBOO, so don't touch that dial and don't change the setting at KBOO.OFM if you're listening to us online.
Well, and I think that the public really needs to weigh in on any changes that are going to be made to the IPR,
mm-hmm.
because since it is supposedly there to actually assist the public in filing complaints and addressing issues of police misconduct, it would be inexcusable to actually push through some massive change without having a due public process so that the public has an opportunity to really weigh in.
Yeah, and I'm being someone who sits late at night and thinks about some of this stuff, and because, you know, I'm compulsive.
Right.
I've really been thinking more and more about the question of, we seem to be locked into this problem. And granted, I think that much of the problems rests within the culture and structure of the police bureau.
Right.
But I have to keep going back to the people who are supposed to be in charge. And if we're not continuously fighting this battle with trying to deal with the people who really should be pushing forward these changes, they're the administrator, the commissioner of police, but at the same time, they're a legislator. So there's the political considerations. And I'm just, feeling like, police are such a unique role in our society. If we don't need to come up with some sort of unique structure,
right.
Many other cities have police commissions.
That's right.
And I it just seems that perhaps one way for us to get around this problem is to not remove the police commissioner from the city council, but certainly, put an intermediate body there that's more independent, something that would be appointed that would include members of the community as well as the city commissioner who's in charge of police and whatever else. But, many other cities, I just read about San Francisco's police commission,
mm-hmm.
which I believe was a five-body commission or six-body commission. And they, for example, just turned down the demands and the push by their police union in San Francisco to arm all their officers with tasers, because the commission came to the conclusion that, looking at the evidence available, that
right.
it would present more of a danger to the citizens than it would in terms of de-escalating the use of deadly force, and that, that they needed to look at this more. But for now, they're not buying any tasers. And I just don't see that sort of, clear-cut decision being made in our current system.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think a couple of the challenges that we face, I want to make sure that we remind the public that the CRC, the Citizen Review Committee, is holding a public meeting Sunday at 2 p.m. at Portland State University at Hoffman Hall. And this is supposedly the opportunity for the public to have input into fixing the system. They're out there to get information from the public, what's working, what's not working. Chief Sizer loves to say that complaints are way, way down, so the police must be doing a good job. But no one looks at the other side, which is people don't file complaints because they have no confidence that anything will change.
Why waste their time?
Right. Why waste the time? Why be targeted by police if you file a complaint, if at the end of the day the complaint will not be reviewed or investigated and then resolved?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a real big issue that's still outstanding. One of the other big issues that's still outstanding is the fact that the city attorney now serves as the attorney for IPR and the CRC and the city of Portland and the police department. And to me, that's a real conflict of interest when the same attorney is advising everyone.
Exactly.
And so the independent police review, if it's really going to be independent, needs its own independent counsel that actually would advise them, regardless of what the attorney thinks should happen within the police department.
Exactly. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Well, we're going to go back to the phone lines because we have some callers waiting on the line. We're talking this morning about, well, we're talking about a lot of things. We're talking about what was going on at the county with Ted Wheeler's departure, and we're still open to talking about that, despite some apparent lack of interest from some of our listeners. But I'm kidding, of course.
Yeah,
I love our listeners.
That's right.
We're also now talking as well about the calls to overhaul police oversight and some specific recommendations that Commissioner Randy Leonard and the city auditor are putting forward and that the city council will be considering next week. So give us a call at 503-231-8187. Do not call Dave's cell phone number should he accidentally give it out. Okay, let's go to the phone lines where we have Rory on the line. Good morning, Rory.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
I just like to say briefly that perhaps when the city negotiates a new contract with the police and with the firemen, that there could be some public input and discussion about what needs to be in the contract and what the terms of employment for the police officers are and the conditions under which they can be dismissed for bad behavior.
Mm-hmm.
They work under a union contract and with the city, which is with the people of Portland, and I think there should be a public input in the crafting of a new contract between the police officers and the people of Portland so that there can be some method in the contract, in their job description, which allows the city to take the people who are making onerous mistakes and killing people and take them out of uniform and putting them out of their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Most contracts have... with labor have methods. If you are grossly negligent, you no longer have your job.
That's
and
right.
I would like to see the people of Portland working with the city and with the unions in crafting the contracts to determine how our public employees relate with the public. And I'm not sure there's been public input in the past with the contract negotiations. It doesn't have to be about salary, but it could certainly be about the terms and conditions and responsibilities that the officers and other employees have. So that's all I had to recommend.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm in full agreement with everything you've said. You know, it's ironic when you think about it. I mean, having been involved with some – well, we just kind of have a little dial tone there. But having been involved with some public employee unions in the past, you know, their process, they have a negotiating team that has – that doesn't necessarily go in and do the nuts and bolts negotiating, but that team consists of union members mm-hmm. to ensure that whatever the negotiators are putting together reflects core values
right.
and core issues that the membership determines before they ever get into the actual negotiation. So there's this whole process to sort of provide a democracy, at least on that side, to what's going on. And, you know, frankly, the city council doesn't do that for us.
That's right.
They're not representing us. They say they are. But, you know, I don't see the evidence of it. I don't think most people see the evidence of it. And I actually don't even feel that necessarily that there's, you know, a lot of gross and horribly bad things in the current contract. But there are clear problems.
Well, I mean, for me, the biggest problem with the current contract is that to have 1,000 employees that you do not do an annual evaluation
exactly.
is pretty appalling. I don't know of any other industry that could get away with not doing annual evaluations. I mean, I have 7 employees, and we do annual evaluations.
And they don't carry guns, I
and
assume.
They don't carry guns, no. And so, you know, so to me, that's just blatantly wrong because you never, ever – I don't even know how we promote police officers if there's no annual evaluation. What kind of judgment do we use? And you may remember this. Remember the early warning system?
Yes.
That we were promised, let's see, I think it's like 5 or 6 years ago
yes.
now, that is a multi-million dollar supposedly corrective measure for police officers so that their supervisors can work with them to improve their behavior. Multi-million dollar computer system that has never, ever, ever, ever operated, ever. And so – That's what we kept hearing for years. Oh, well, as soon as the system is up and running, we will be able to monitor and track police officers' behavior. So now that we've waited 6 years for that, let's just, like, do annual evaluations. Let's
exactly.
do eyeball to eyeball and say, this is where you're doing well, this is where you need improvement, and these are the improvements I expect by the next evaluations session.
Of course, then you're raising the issue that isn't necessarily covered by the contract directly, which is the management within
yes.
the Bureau
That's right.
is not interested. And they, I believe, are in some ways far more culpable than the patrolman on or patrolwoman on the street, the foot soldiers within the Bureau. I think the management is not interested in engaging in those sort of practices because it would erode and dismantle the culture that they have become so comfortable with.
That's absolutely right, which is why the next police chief can't come from Portland. It's
exactly. got
to come from some other police department that has shown that they have been successful and transformative leadership within a police bureau's culture.
But it can't be Mark Croker.
Well, we already know. We've tried and failed that one miserably. But we all knew when he was hired that he was not the right fit.
Well, as
I mean, he had a nice smile, and he looked good in uniform. But
apparently that's as far as Vera looked, because she did no real background investigation on the man.
Because it didn't take us long to find out all sorts of things
about his background. No. I ended up learning far more about Mark Croker than I ever wanted to. So,
you and me
yeah.
both.
Well, let's go back to the phone lines, because we have some callers waiting on the line. And again, if you want to join us in the conversation, we've moved on to the police bureau and some proposed changes. And you want to join us, give us a call at
231-8187.
I'm sorry. Anyway, let's go to the phone line where we have our next caller. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing
pretty
good.
Fine. How about you?
I want to get Joanne's cell phone, first of all.
I'm giving that one out next after I give my own out.
Say, I'm not having that problem.
Okay. Well, you know, I you guys are talking about government. I think a little bit of corruption. I think there's so much corruption in government on both sides of the aisle. You know, as a Republican Tea Partier, I think there's corruption on both sides. And I think it's time that we really do some changes, and that's why I think you're seeing the changes like you did on the East Coast, and it's going to continue in November, and because we really need to clean out Washington, we need to clean out the state legislatures and government's offices, and it's time to get them all out and get some new blood in there, and that's why I think this will be Obama's final. He'll only be a one-term president.
Well, thank you for sharing your perspective. I totally disagree with it, but I hope you have a fabulous day.
I think he's gone. I think he said his piece and moved on.
He took off.
I was going to ask if the one thing that I haven't heard them say is an interest in they meaning. People who are identifying themselves with the Tea Party, is the whole question of getting money out of the system.
Oh,
I never hear campaign finance reform really being one of their things. It's just we'll throw the candidates out and then get new ones in. But you know, if there's the same ones dipping into some of those corporate wells,
that's right.
What's the difference?
Well, and then the other thing, you know, with the teabaggers is you have to say they talk about Massachusetts, but they don't talk about New York, and they don't talk about the places where teabaggers went down in flames.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm sure we'll have many opportunities as we get closer to election season to engage teabaggers in dialogue.
Well, and they actually, in your absence, they have been calling,
they're
warming up.
So
and,
they know when I'm out of town.
Yes, and can I give them a number to forward them to you? So
he did start off asking for myself, so that was thoughtful.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was going to say there's some other things about this proposal, too, that I guess we really haven't raised. And one would be that under this proposal of reforming the IPR, the IPR director would be required to sign off on all internal affairs investigations to ensure they're thorough and unbiased, and if not, send cases back for additional interviews or evidence gathering or initiate an independent inquiry. So there's kind of that piece of being able to do the independent inquiry is also to be more proactive than they have been in terms of the Eternal Affairs. Well, in fact, it basically, you know, they've pretty much been barred from up until now of really being involved in any participation in the Internal Affairs.
That's right.
Investigations.
Yeah, they couldn't even touch a case until after the Internal Affairs was over, after they had concluded their process.
Right. They would also, let's see, we've already talked about the fact that they would have subpoena power. It elevates the IPR director to a voting member instead of an advisory member of what would be called a police review board, with the power to make findings and recommend discipline in use of force or misconduct cases. The board would replace the Bureau's two existing boards, take away voting power from the immediate manager or the involved officer, and have the auditor, instead of the police chief, choose the pool of citizen volunteers on the board, which is also sort of an interesting recommendation as well. And the IPR would also oversee all complaints against Portland police from other officers or Bureau supervisors, which is not allowed, which is now allowed only at the police bureau's discretion. So, which is, again, kind of an interesting wrinkle on that as well. And I personally don't know how much of an issue that is. But
right.
I guess, you know, again, complaints against police officers from other officers would presumably be an effort to break down that blue wall.
That thin blue wall. Right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that I want to really applaud the fact that Randy Leonard has stepped out there to actually tackle this issue. It is my hope that we do not pass this in an emergency fashion, because I think it needs more work, and I think we need more community involvement in developing a good proposal rather than rushing to put in place a quick fix that, in fact, will not fundamentally change how independent police review happens in the city of Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's my hope that Commissioner will make the case for why this is the right proposal, but I still believe that ultimately what we need is an independently elected board that actually will hold police accountable, because that's the only way the community can be assured that the board is working for them and not working at the bequest of police officers within the Bureau.
That's right. Or else you're back with that 1961 Chevy Bel Air that
that's
I had
right.
and kept
that's
trying
right.
to make run. And I guess, you know, we're almost out of time, but I do want to point out there is one very specific thing that would be important in terms of with the contract negotiations with the police bureau starting. One of the things that the union contract does specifically require is that only that an officer can only be interviewed by a police officer in internal affairs inquiries. So the proposal is that this IPR investigator would not be able to question the officer directly. They would, to try to get around that, they would have the liaison investigator who would either repeat the IPR questions or direct the officer to answer. So, you know, I think we just need to remove that language and
right.
let's let the investigators do their job.
Investigate, right.
Investigate. So, you know, they just need to kind of bite the bullet, get over it.
I know that because of the AMA coalition's efforts, we are continuing to have impact on this issue. And so I think with the public pressure that continues to be put on the mayor, because, again, I think the community understands there's a police commissioner, but they also understand that the buck stops with the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And so the community has been very clear that, you know, yes, the rest of the city council has a role to play in accountability, but ultimately want to see the mayor actually step up and be the leader to make sure that we are putting in a fix that actually will work not just temporarily short term, but actually over the long haul. And this might be it, but it might not be. And so I'm hopeful that they will be open to saying, well, you know, it's a good start, but let's go back and actually make sure that it does what it's
right.
supposed
this
to do.
Is- by no means the end of the conversation or the efforts to do that. So, well, you know, it's been very quiet, and I know that's because our listeners have been taking copious notes
yes,
on everything
yes,
we've
yes,
said.
Yes.
We will be quizzing you next week.
That's right.
I'm Dave Mazza.
And I'm Joanne Bowman.
And you've been listening to Voices from the Edge.
And we'll see you next week, same time, same place, same station.
All right.